So let's begin. This is Parshat Bishalach, and I want to start. Okay, we're going to start at the beginning, and then we're going to get into something from the Vilna Gaon, which will require to do properly far more time than we have now. So it's really going to be an introduction to it, and then we'll see where exactly it takes us. If any of that made no sense whatsoever, I apologize. But meanwhile, we'll go back to the beginning. So, v'yugad l'melech Mitzrayim ki baracha am. At some point along the way, so presumably this is after 3 days, because they were given permission to go for 3 days, and then Paro, the king of Egypt, is told, or the king of Egypt, we're here told, is informed that the people have escaped. Ki baracha am, they're gone. V'yafech levav Paro v'avada v'la'am, v'yomur mazot asinu ki shalachnu Yisrael mi avdenu. You know, what in the world do we do that we've now have sent them away, we've released them from the servitude, from being our slaves, which means they have this sudden realization that it's over, because maybe they could have been deluding themselves till now that all along it was only about 3 days in the desert, it was only about praying, it was only about serving God, and they must have known that if you let the slaves out, there's a chance you'll never see them again. But it's at this point they realize this. V'yasarat rechvo v'et amo, Lakach imo. So he takes the chariots and he goes, takes the people, and they're off on the chase. V'ikach sheshmot rechav b'chor b'chor rechav Mitzrayim v'sholashim al kulo, and he takes all of these things, people, power. V'chazek Hashem lev paro melech Mitzrayim v'irdof achorei b'nei Yisrael. And God made him more stubborn, and he then continues his chase. U'bnei Yisrael yotzim b'yad b'rama. The Jews went, and they went Yad Ramah, really, they go with a strong hand, they go, I guess I would even say, with their heads held up high, and shall we say, the story begins. So this is the start. Now, there's a passage over here in the Zohar, which I don't know how much or how little to explain. The Zohar is, as usual, not going to be completely easy. I'm going to read a little bit, but there's something here that I'm really looking for a commentary on it. So let's even go straight to the Hebrew translation. The Zohar is in Aramaic. Va'etz shel hadat, or etz hadat, tov v'ra, tzarech lasot bo pirud bein tov l'ra. The thing about the etz hadat tov v'ra, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, is that it has good and evil. So therefore what you need to do is you need to separate the good and the evil. And that zeh shekatuv, that's what it means when it says v'yevdel elokim et ha'or uvein ha'choshech. That God does separations over here. Specifically, the separation is separation between light and darkness. V'tzarech lasot bo kitzutz she'ha'adam b'li yetzahara. Moreover, we need to, in a sense, cut the tree so that we won't have the yetzahara, because the yetzahara that we have comes from the serpent, comes from eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So this combination, and by the way, that's part of it. The fact, if it was completely bad, maybe it wouldn't be as enticing. But the fact that it has good in it makes it look, the veneer at least, makes it look like it's something which is good and something which we're going to enjoy, and therefore we are interested in it. But you need to cut this down. In the same way that that's why the serpent needed its legs to be cut off, because you need to cut off all connections to this evil confusion and so on. And somehow this is connected to Memtet, to the 49, Mimetatron. Now, Metatron is the name of an angel. It's the name of a good angel. It's the name of an angel who's actually in charge, as it were, of all kinds of things in heaven. And it says that the Memtet of Metatron, 49, Him Arbimitesh Panim Tahor. That's the side of good. But again, the tree of knowledge of good and evil has good and evil, so it has the power of heaven, as it were. Umitzido, but on the other hand, it has Samael, and Samael is this power of Esav, the power of evil, the power of the devil, as it were, abimitesh panim tame. And that's the sign of the evil which is there. So you have this striving between good and evil. Metatron is actually far more important than I'm letting on right now. Sometimes Metatron is called the Sar Hapnim, the one who's in charge, or the second in command, as it were. I will tell you that down on Earth, there's actually two different people who have been associated with the kind of power that Metatron has. One is Moshe Rabbeinu, because Metatron is sometimes called the Sofer, the writer, the one who keeps track of things in heaven. and Moshe is the one who's the sofer, the one who writes below. And the other one who's connected to Metatron is Yosef, because Yosef is the second to the king. Yosef is the one who's in charge, and Metatron, therefore, is also, as it were, second to the king, and has some kind of power in heaven that God gives this angel to be in charge of all the other angels. Anyway, I hope some of that made sense. Umisha zochel chaber, hey, la arbim v'teisha panim shel tahor, somebody who's connect God, chaber Hashem, to the 49 levels of good, shehu chamisha chamishe Torah. So what is the hey? The hey is the five books of Torah, and then when you put the hey, which is the five books of Torah, together with the mem tet, which is the 49, na'ase mate. The five from the five books of Torah, and the mem tet from Metatron, the 49 levels of good, it together becomes mate. So what does the word mate mean? The word mate is the staff that Moshe used in order to do the various plagues in Egypt. Na'ase mate lakot bo et yitzro, ima'ot yud shehi aseret makot. So what this is telling us over here is that the way that this works somehow is that the force, as it were, that's being used to punish the Egyptians is connected to this side of good. It's this side of good. It somehow connects together with the name of God, and then the mate is what strikes Egypt. And it strikes them 10 times, yud. Ha'ot yud, right? Shehi eser makot. V'hainu hei en yud me'elokim. And that is the letter hei and the letter yud from God, right? The ten makot, the letter hei. I'm sorry if this is getting complicated. And those two together in the name Elohim. Now, what he's about to tell you is what's going to happen if you take out the hei, you take out the yud, because right now we just put them in. Mishum kach nekor matei ha'elokim. And that's why it's called the staff of God, because it is has this hey and this yud, and Moshe uses it. Ubalamateh huvav, shenem bao hine enochi kori prit neneged kol amecha. And therefore, there's a vav which is connected. A vav is always a connection, because vav in the Hebrew language always connects. Vav is connections. In the Mishkan as well, you'll see the vavim are the connecting points. And therefore, the vav is the brit, because the brit is what connects God and the Jewish people. And it says, and if it wouldn't be for the yud gimel midot, which is the covenant which connects God and the people, then we would be empty. Shorachim shelo yachzor reikam, that we shouldn't go end up completely empty b'tfilato. She'ilem, somebody who can't speak, b'li heyayud ba reikam, that essentially if you take the hey and the yud out of Elokim, it becomes ilem, and at that point it becomes empty. Now I know that that went quick, and I know that that's not so clear. If any of you got any out of that, that's great. V'zeo shomer Yaakov, lule Elokei avi, Elokei Avraham v'pachad Yitzchak hayali. Ki ata rekam shelachtani. Had it not been for the covenant that God has with Avram, with Yitzchak, then Yaakov says, I would have left empty-handed when he leaves Lavan. Lama, v'lama, why? Bishum shenema b'lavan, because it said regarding Lavan, v'techalif et maskarati eser et monim. You've changed my wages 10 times. Now again, yud, eser is yud. Uva'ot yud, naselones. But with the yud, with the number 10, is where the miracle took happen. She Elokim, again, Elokim has the hey and the yud inside. Hotsimi meni hey, nishar ilem. So therefore, if you take away Elokim, you take away the hey and the yud, what's left is ilem. Beli reik beli torah sheba alpeh. Avomisha b'tpalel tefilala etzchayim. That's the other tree in the Garden of Eden. Lo yachzor reikam. If you're involved in Torah, which is etzchayim, lo yachzor reikam b'tfilato leolam. Mishum ze yesh Elokim miyatzad shel etzadat tovura, and that's the reason that if you look at the descriptions of the tree of knowledge and of evil, the name Elokim is used, and you need the hay and the yud connected. V'yesh Elokim chayim u'melech olam mitzad she etzachayim. Then when it comes to the tree of life, which is Torah, then there is this, in a sense, the words of the living God or the living words of God, as we've learned earlier. Ve'ein zochim lo ela balei kabbalah sheyodin etzadot haTorah. And the only ones who understand what I just now said, the Zohar teaches us, are people who have a tradition and they know the various secrets of the Torah. So for full disclosure, I just now taught something which is almost impossible to understand properly. So let's think about what it just now told us. It told us some kind of an idea that this staff that Moshe used was not something plain. There was some kind of a divine blessing to it. Maybe that's all we need to know right now. And somehow, while discussing this, it sort of slid over to the Yaakov Lavan story. And that, by the way, is what's really going to be interesting to us. And at the end of throwing out these numbers and these connections, the Eitz Hadaat and the Eitz Chaim and the cutting and the legs of the serpent, which I threw in, and all this, at the very end it said, yeah, but to really understand this, you need a tradition. And if you don't have a tradition, then you're not going to understand this. So therefore, all of us are completely in the dark, and I wasted just now around 10 minutes of your lives. So because what did we really understand from that? But what I want to do is now look at a comment to this, which was made by the Vilna Gaon. And, you know, I discussed the Vilna Gaon a little bit in the other class. And he says over here, Rekam Shlachtani, I would have gone empty-handed. Shehu Vav, Malay. Over here, it's the Vav is whole. Don't worry about that right now. Kana below Yud Kei, Ilem. He just explained this thing about how without the Yud and the Hey, it ends up Ilem instead of Elokim. Vanyan Ki Yaakov Alavan Dugmat Yisroel Mitzrayim. And now he tells us, and this is the point I wanted to get to, that the underlying issue of that passage in the Zohar is that the relationship between Yaakov and Lavan is a... Now, the word he uses is dugmat. So the word, okay, the word in modern Hebrew, it could be a model. But, and that's a really good word. Ki Yaakov Lavan dugmat Yisroel Mitzrayim. I'm tempted to use the word microcosm, but I'd rather use the word model. Because this is the model of what's going to happen later on. Now, I'm just going to add one thing. That sometimes when you build a model before you build the house, and then you actually build the house, it doesn't come out precisely like the model, even though it's based on it. That's going to be what happens here. There's a microcosm and a macrocosm. The macrocosm is not going to be precisely like the microcosm, which is why, again, I like the word Dugmat Yisrael, it's the model of what's going to happen to the Jews in Egypt. Galut Yaakov. Just like we say that there's this principle of Maaseh Avot Siman Lebanim, that things that happened in the past are signals for the future. Again, it doesn't say determine the future. It doesn't say it's identical to the future. Rather, it's a Siman Lebanim. It's a sign. And after Yaakov said that I'm Rekam, that I'm empty, I don't have anything, what does he do? He takes all of the possessions of Lavan, which means that Lavan is about to send him with nothing, and that's when he does this whole thing, if you remember, with the stripes and with the, you know, the different animals and so on, which ones he'll keep and which ones he'll gray. And he says that he takes all of the possessions, Shekatuv hinei ra'iti et kol asher Lavan, v'chein, and the same thing took place, v'yinatzlo Mitzrayim, that the Jews, when they left Egypt, they left with all the possessions of Egypt. So now, full stop. All that he's told us so far is one major point and then one detail. The major point is that what happens when Yaakov leaves Lavan is going to be, in a certain sense, the prototype of what's going to happen when the Jews are going to leave Mitzrayim. And then he just gave us one example. Let's maybe tease this out a little bit more. Yaakov, in a certain sense, uses the word enslavement. He was enslaved by Lavan. Lavan fools him. He works for him. He works for him for free. He works for 7 years. He works for another 7 years. He works for another 6 years. And he's going to leave with nothing to show for all of his work. So realize right there, that is what we would call enslavement. Then something happens, and he says, you know, it would have been that I would have left empty-handed. And at that point, he does something, and we're going to explain a little bit more of it in a moment, but then he leaves with all of these possessions. What's the point of the Vilna Gaon? When the Jews leave Egypt, they leave with all of these possessions. And so far, he's saying that is the point of connection, but it's not the only one. He's going to go so much more detailed. And I'm going to tell you now, I'm not today trying to hyper-focus on every single one of these details. I believe that there are many of them. I believe that there are dozens of them. And we're just going to touch upon some of them and in order, you know, to get a little bit of insight. But this is the kind of thing that one needs to contemplate for a very long time. I'm saying years. really literally years, to keep on going back and forth in the two sections to understand what's going on. But I want to read the language of the Vilna Gaon a little bit more, because I'm not sure if he gets more daring, but he gets more specific. He then says, "V'entzul Mitzrayim uvemakel l'kal lavan b'ruchusho," and it was actually the staff that was used in order to punish Lavan, dugmat matet b'Mitzrayim, just like the staff was used in Egypt. Now you may be saying to yourselves, "Well, what are you talking about? Where was the staff in the Lavan story? We're about to see in a moment." And then he continues, "Ukamosha baruch Yaakov," in the same way that Yaakov ran away, "kach b'Mitzrayim, sha'amru derech shlosha imim," the same way, "kaman shekasuv b'ha tikunei zohar b'purkin akadmita denafku b'venusa v'chein derech shlosha yamim v'chein v'yugad l'lavan b'yom ha'shlishi v'chein hisigu b'yom ha'shvi'i k'mo shekatu v'yidrav acharav derech v'chule akol k'mo b'Mitzrayim." So we just now said, well, it's not just the money, it's also the staff, it's not just the staff, the same words are used that Paro hears that the Jews had left, Lavan hears that Yaakov has left, Paro chases for 3 days, Lavan had chased for 3 days, Lavan catches up with Yaakov on the seventh day, Paro catches up with the Jews on the seventh day, and he says, if you begin to pay attention, and now listen to these words, Hakol kimo b'Mitzrayim, everything is about the leaving of Egypt, v'chein kol ma'aseh l'mi shemidakdek, and everything about this is the same for the person who is careful and pays attention. So if you never noticed this before, and I can assure you that most people, every year they read one section, every year they read the second section, and most people don't begin to realize that there is this inner connection between the two. Again, one is the prototype, one is the model, and the other one is the macrocosm, and it is the fulfillment of the earlier guarantee, but they're related. B'chein, and similarly, and that's the reason in the Haggadah of Pesach, where do we start the story from? This is already from the Mishnah. We start the story from Me'arami Obid Avi. That's Lavan. That Lavan was the one who enslaved my great-great-grandfather, Yaakov. That's part of the same story. So if you want to tell the story of leaving Egypt, where do you start from? It says that you start from the story of Lavan and Yaakov, because the Gemara is saying, yeah, it's the same story. With the stripes and so on. Because Yaakov said that you fooled me 10 times, and over here, and he ends up getting all of the possessions coming to you. Mitzrayim, the Esser Makot, to you, Esser Nisim Israel. So 10 miracles were done for Yaakov, he says, and 10 miracles were done for the Jews. V'chein b'Yaakov Lavan l'kabim amonno v'netkayim b'Yaakov k'mo b'Mitzrayim v'acharei chein yatsu b'ruchush gadol v'chein b'Yaakov tiv uvasher l'avino. So what it's, again, the main point over here is the money, but it's not just the money, it's also the staff, and it's not just the staff, it's more elements, and he did not tell us everything. So again, where did we begin? We began with a verse that said that Vayugad Lamech Tzarki Barach Ha'am, that it was told to the king of Egypt that the people had ran away. So we go down now to source number 4, which is Parak Lamed. It says, I don't want that one yet. I'll come back to that one in a moment. Look at source number 5, Pasukav Ped, Vayugad Lavan, V'yom Shlishi Ki Barach Yaakov. So it's the same content. And on the third day, he was told. So actually, the third day is earlier in the narrative, and that's source number 4. That is where Yaakov says to Lavan, you know, let me go. V'hikashe Yogar Rachel et Yosef. And we're going to have to come back to that. As soon as Yosef was born, Yaakov says to Lavan, let me go. Shalcheni, let me go to my land. So over here, it's also essentially, again, words are different. Moshe doesn't say, let me go to my land, even though we know that's where he wants to go. Tanali Mashaivi Iladaya Sha Avadati. Now notice the word avdut, I worked for, or I was enslaved for, right? And let me go, right? Ki atayadati et avodati asher avodaticha. Because you know the enslavement that you enslaved me. So just notice the word avdut being used, which is really easy to have translated all along the way, not as servitude, sorry, not as work, but as servitude. And, oh, well, all the way around. We could have translated not as servitude, but as work. But now we realize that we should be looking for these connections, so it becomes more interesting. By the way, when the Jews, there's another connection. When the Jews leave Egypt, it says that they found favor in the eyes of the Egyptians. Right? They were blessed because of you, and later on, Egypt will also be blessed because of Yosef and Yaakov. But tell me your wages, and I'll pay you. And so on. Right? Again, the 3 days of separation. The makel is a stick. And that's exactly what he was saying. It was with this stick that he did this thing with the stripes and the so on on the sheep. And that is the connection with the stories, which again, if it were the word mate, it would have been much easier. But the word makel and the word mate, they both mean staff. And that's what the Zohar was telling us. I'll just notice that Lavan was struck, as it were, with the makel. And that's how Yaakov ended up making all of the money when all the sheep came out in his favor. And at that point, Yaakov becomes very wealthy. We continue a little bit in the Yaakov-Lavan narrative. And he says, I worked with all of my strength. That's in Pasuk Vav. And the Yugad, he's told, and he chases him. And Kaf Dalet is interesting, and again, you would not have connected this necessarily. God appears to Lavan in the night, and he says, Hishamer lecha, pent the Berem Yaakov mitovara. God comes in and micromanages the, I'm going to use a different phrase now, because then it would be much easier. He micromanages the free will of Lavan and says, you better be nice to Yaakov, and you better not say anything not nice to him. Of course, in the Pesach story, it's completely different, as we saw from the very beginning, that God comes in and micromanages and tells Paro to keep on chasing him, and he's going to end up on the bottom of the sea. But in both stories, the adversary ends up getting a visitation from God who controls his free will and then causes him to do something. But again, perhaps the most striking point over here is that the stories then end very, very differently. But Yom Lavan LeYaakov, I'm in Pasuk Kafav now, still on the top of page 2. Masita v'dignova levaviv v'dinegba v'naikashvot yacharev. You know, what did you do that you took my daughters? Lamanach beitil of ruach. Why did you run away from me v'dignovoti? And you robbed me. V'lo igadatulei, and you didn't tell me. And then Lavan says something, and you could decide if he's being truthful or not, but I think it's very interesting. Had I known you were leaving, I would have made a party for you. It would have been a celebration. We would have been singing, and we would have had a tof and a kinor. We would have had our musical instruments, and we all would have partied. And by the way, my question right there is: do you believe him, or do you not believe him? So on the one hand, you can say, yeah, Lavan loves parties. Lavan loves parties, and he would have made a party for Yaakov leaving. On the other hand, you can say to yourselves, well, maybe not. Maybe I don't necessarily trust Lavan. But I do think that this line over here does have an echo later on. Most importantly is, as this section comes to an end, let us make a covenant, the two of us. Yaakov and Lavan, they build an altar, they make a vow, they do have a party, they end up slaughtering some animal and celebrating and so on. And at the end, Vizvach Yaakov Zevach Bahar, Yaakov makes an offering, Vekrelacha Becholechem, Yechulechem Be'alimu Bahar. So the section ends up with a covenant between the two of them and a peace treaty between the two of them and a celebration between the two. So I just want to, you know, remind us. When the Jews left Egypt, they said, we're going to go and we're going to celebrate in the desert. And we're going to serve God in the desert. Over here, when Yaakov leaves, he ends up celebrating and serving God. The only difference over here is between the two stories is that Paro ends up chasing down to kill them and ends up on the bottom of the sea, and God controls him and tells him to continue. While in the story of Yaakov leaving Lavan, Lavan catches up and God gets involved and says, you better not do anything to him. You better be nice to him. And over here, they end up with a peace treaty. So that is probably one of the reasons why you would have been very tempted to say, well, this is not really the same story, is it? So I just want to pause there for a moment. One of the things which I think is important about the Exodus story, the story of leaving Egypt, is that it in turn serves as the prototype for the eventual geula, for the eventual redemption that takes place at the end of days. So part of the question is going to come up is what's going to happen to our so-called adversaries? Will God micromanage them and have them chase us down and end up killing all of them? Or will they threaten us, but at the end make a covenant with us and make a peace treaty with us and accept us completely? So what I'm pointing out now is that what's really important about this section is that, I don't know if they still do this back years ago, before you had Netflix and there used to be DVDs. Do you remember DVDs still? No? And sometimes a director would have an alternative ending of a movie, the director's cut. So they'll have two different endings. Couldn't decide how to end the story. Will I end the story like this? Will I end the story like this? And the truth is that's completely fascinating. I mean, if you ever write any stories or have any essays they have to give in for a writing class, a composition, a literature class, it's just a fascinating thing to do to say, okay, what's the ending going to be? And to say, well, I have two different endings, and the story can end different ways because ultimately my protagonists have free will, and my protagonist can end the story this way, or my protagonist can end the story this way. But that's what's fascinating right here in terms of Jewish history. We have two different models in terms of the story of the Jews becoming free. One model is where Lavan makes a peace treaty, and the other model is where Paro ends up dead. So when the end of days come, which model will it be? Well, in a certain sense, that's completely up to the free will of the individual who's going to be involved in it, which may sound very strange for me to say the free will, because over here in both cases, God controlled the free will. Well, God controlled the free will in each of those cases, and we'll get to the third case. Whoever is the protagonist will get to choose, which one do I want? Do I want to follow the power route? Do I want to follow the love route? Do I want to make a covenant with these people and a peace treaty with these people, or do I want to fight them to the death, which is going to end up being their deaths? Which means the two models are there, and that to me is what's so interesting about the Lavan Yaakov Paro Yisrael relationship, is because they have two endings. I'm saying that's part of really what I think is significant. But there's another element over here which I've been skipping. And remember the Gros said, if you really pay attention, you're going to find all of it. But of course, we don't pay attention. But first, another thing, at least one more connection, and then we'll move on. It says that in source number 6, and this is in this week's Parsha, that when the Jews get out, they sing, Oz Yashir. They start to sing a song. Now, who created that idea? Who put that idea in their heads that when you leave, you're supposed to sing? And the answer is, it's Lavan. Lavan said, had I known you were leaving, I would have sent you, go back to Pasuk of Zayin, Vashtecha b'simcha uvishirim b'tov v'chinor. I would have sent you with a joyful celebration of song, b'tov v'chinor. Now, if you go, again, we decided that was a tambourine. If you look further in this narrative of in source number 6, where they sing the Oz Yashir, then it says, and she then takes the tambourine in her hand and the tupim and the machalot, and they start dancing and singing and so on. Whose idea was this? Which means, of course, it's clear whose idea it is. It's Lavan's idea, which means that story also had the model or the prototype of what actualizes in the Egypt story, even though there it was in potential and it never happened. Over here it happens. And that's what I'm saying, is that the Vilna Gaon is saying, look carefully. There's so much more which is here. Source 7 and 8 refer to this passage that we talk about on Seder night about Lavan, that Lavan is a part of the story. And therefore we start our Passover Seder by talking about it. Okay. Source number 9 is how we end the Passover Seder, which is, of course, the Chad Gadya. So I'm not going to sing, and I'm not going to put on a YouTube of somebody singing the Chad Gadya. But I think you know how the story goes. Oh, and by the way, in Chad Gadya, the Zabin Abed betray Zuze. You have the Gdi, which is the lamb, and then you have the cat. Then you have the dog. You eventually have the chutra. The chutra is the stick. By the way, the chutra is the mateh. That is the staff that we were talking about earlier. Here is the Vilna Gaon's explanation to the Chad Gadya. He gives you the key to understanding this, but first I have to read his commentary a little bit. Chad Gadya d'Zaven Abba. You know, my father sold this gdi, this land. Pirish, you should understand the interpretation. Chal gadol etzlenu. The Vilna Gaon says, by us, meaning by him, there is a general principle. Shekol atavot, all the good, shehayu, v'sheyiyu, od bein ba'olam hazeh, bein ba'olam haba. All the good in this world, et kulam yirashnu me'avotenu. All of them we inherited them from the patriarchs and the matriarchs. And when specifically? Be'et shebirach Yitzchak et Yaakov. When Rivka tells Yaakov, go in and take that blessing, he says, all the good in the world comes from that blessing. B'lulei habrachot chasarnu et hakol. Had it not been for those blessings, we would be devoid of everything. V'kol hayu le'esav, and Esav would have received everything. V'asiba le'brachot hayu shnei gdei izim. And the reason we got that is because Yaakov then prepared, Rivka prepared the food that Yaakov brought into his father, to Yitzchak, and gave him these two gdei izim. U'v'gemara amru, and in the Gemara it says, v'chim al'chlosh Yitzchak yu shnei gdei izim, that's really what he ate, ela achad le'pesach v'achad le'chagiga. No, that they were already celebrating Pesach that night. Rabotenu Dorshu, kach lecha shnei gdei izim tovim tov lecha betov lebanecha. That when you're going to bring this to your father now to eat, it's going to be, again, celebrating, just now saw Pesach, and good for you and good for your descendants. Tov lecha shetirash et brachot. It's good for you because you're going to receive the brachot. Betov lebanecha shisku lehavi shnei seirim lechaper la biyom kippurim. So he says there's actually a dual understanding of this. One is that these lambs are going to be used for the Korban Pesach and Chagiga, and then at the same time, it's going to somehow metamorphosize into the two goats which are going to be used on Yom Kippur. Echad l'Hashem v'chad l'Azazel. One for God and one for Azazel. If you don't know the secret of Azazel, it is connected to Esav, which means the question over here is who's going to receive this gift? Is it going to be Yaakov or is it going to be Esav? Yaakov or Esav? Again, this problem that we had the last part of Bereshit, maybe the middle part of Bereshit, Beniran, it seems. The Haba Hatalia, these are connected. Kamosha Sirim Shayom Kippurim Echad Ba Lechaper, Echad Ba Lefayes. One is to bring atonement and one is to bring reconciliation. Et Satan Shaliyah Katreg, Kacha Sirim. The Yadua. And it's well known. And by the way, if it wasn't well known, hopefully now it becomes known. Ki abrachot, these blessings that Yaakov took, Masar Yaakov bin Olashem levno liYosef. Yosef becomes the beneficiary of these blessings, which means all the good we have in the world, we're told, are because of these blessings. And who ends up with these blessings? Yosef. Gamba b'chora, he ends up getting the blessing as firstborn. Natan lo, kishibreich Yaakov levanav, b'kol ha'shavtim, lo namalashon bracha. Doesn't use the word bracha when he blesses his children. Uvi Yosef tiv, brichot avicha, tiyana l'rosh Yosef. The blessings of my father are going to Yosef. The Gamza Yadua, Shashvatim Gavra Kin'ah Beinehim Umachurit Yosef, that when it came to the brothers, this amount of jealousy and I won't say hatred yet, but jealousy. And by the way, the word Kin'ah, Kaf 100, Nun 50, 150, 1, 151, Hey 156 is the same as Yosef, Yud is 10, Vav is 6, 16. Samach is 60, and Pei is 80, it's also 156. The kin'ah, the jealousy that the brothers had, where they sold Yosef, l'mitzrayim, kidei levatel habrachot v'abachora, in order to try to frustrate and to cancel the ability of Yosef to get these blessings and the first right of firstborn. V'nit galgela davar v'yadu avotenu l'mitzrayim. Looks like a mistake. And the way that it worked out, that our descendants also ended up going to Egypt. Viktiv v'tamateh hazeh, now we're back to the mateh, the staff, tikach biyadecha, asher tasapo et autot. that Moshe is eventually told to take the mateh, that you can do the miracles. That it was the mateh that ends up getting Levan. And all of the blessings, the spiritual blessings, even the building later of the Beit HaMikdash or the Mishkan, all comes through this Mateh, and Moshe gives it over to Yehoshua. That's going to be important as well. And that is really what this Chad Gadya is all about, how when they got to Egypt, how things went from one to the other. And now he explains. Vatashunra, a cat has jealousy. Teva hashunra, the nature of a cat, he mitkanot, it has kin'an, jealousy. Vizeo kin'an shvatim shekanu biyosef. That what is it talking about, the cat? The cat comes because it's jealous of Yosef. Now remember, Chad Gadya is what the gift that was given to Yitzchak, where Yaakov gets the bracha, and the bracha goes to Yosef, but the brothers are jealous of Yosef, and that's where the nature of the cat emerges. Vata kalba, and then this dog comes. Zuparo, paro is the dog. Vata chutra, and then the staff comes, the stick. Zehamate, sheikala paro. That's the stick of Moshe that hits paro. Va'atanura, but then comes the fire, Zayitzahara, that burns within us. That's the evil inclination. Va'atatura, and then comes afterwards this big, powerful bull, Ze'edom, that's Esav. Vishatulamaya, and it tried to drink up the water, Zekneset Yisrael. The Jewish people are connected to water, connected to Torah. Va'atahashochet, but then arrives the Shochet, and who's the Shochet? Zemashiach ben Yosef. Now, you maybe say, hold it, how did we get there? Well, remember something. Yosef is the one who is the, how did we describe him earlier? Not today. We described him as being the person who grows up in the house of Potiphar. Potiphar is the Sar HaTabachim. He is the Shochet. He is the executioner of Egypt, but he's the executioner who's evil. Yosef, who grows up in that house, becomes the Shochet, but the Shochet for good. And that's Mashiach ben Yosef, who comes to the end of days, to destroy Edom, Esav, who has somehow tried to destroy the Jewish people. But the Malach HaMavet, and then the Malach HaMavet comes, Ki Mashiach ben Yosef Neharag. And he comes to try to kill Mashiach ben Yosef, who is killed. And by the way, that's a much deeper point if he's actually killed or not, because it looks for a very long time as if Yosef is dead. But then we find out much later that Yosef is not dead. Now look what the Vilna Gaon just now did. He took the story of Egypt and the story of Jewish history, and he stuck a character into it who maybe we wouldn't have suspected as part of the story, and that's Yosef. So some of you know that we have a hard time of letting go of Yosef, and you thought, that's it, we left Bereshit, and Yosef is over with. And now the Vilna Gaon comes and says, oh, no, look at the Chad Gadya, look what's really going on, that Yosef is really the force over here, and I'm going to explain what he said in a language, hopefully, that we can understand it. And it was interesting that earlier when he said, oh, everything about leaving Egypt is really based upon leaving Lavan's house, there was one thing he left out and didn't tell us about, and that was actually Yosef. Now, I have a book over here. I actually have more than one copy of it. It's a book from the Vilna Gaon's students, and it's his Secret Doctrine of, I don't know if you can see this at all, of the Messianic Age. In his Secret Doctrine, it's all about Mashiach ben Yosef. There are 156 different aspects of Mashiach ben Yosef over here in chapter 2, because Yosef is, the gematria is 156. And as far as the Vilna Gaon is concerned, the most important character in terms of Jewish history is Yosef, and by extension, Mashiach ben Yosef. So for the Vilna Gaon to say, oh yeah, everything over here is really exactly the same, but he left one thing out, and that was Yosef. So now let's fix that, and let's put Yosef back into the story. And then you'll understand really what the Vilna Gaon is doing, and really, you know, how to understand leaving Egypt. But let's go back now to the beginning of our parsha. We didn't go on that path, Kikarov, who was close. Rather, we took them in a roundabout way. which is also interesting about Jewish history, things are roundabout and not in the most direct way that you would have anticipated. And they left. And they were armed when they left. Whatever arms they had would have been primitive. But Pasuk Yutet is the dramatic Pasuk, which is so easy to miss. But Moshe takes the remains of Yosef, which means as much as you thought that Yosef was not part of the story of leaving Egypt, there he is. The remains of Yosef were taken by Moshe. Because he made a vow. By the way, the story with Lavan and Yaakov ends up with a vow, ends up with a peace treaty. But over here we have a vow as well, but the vow is a little different. The vow is about taking Yosef with him, because there was a vow that was made that when they leave, they will take Yosef. So therefore, Yosef somehow snuck into the story. But you would have thought that that's really like a side point. You know, the Jews are armed, chamushim. I personally will read the two verses together. Am Yisrael took their primitive weapons and thought that's going to save them. But Moshe took the remains of Yosef. And in reality, that's what saved them. In source number 12, where it talks about Yosef running out of Eshet Potiphar's, or Mrs. Potiphar's, room, it says, "Vatitpaseu bivigdo," she grabs him by the clothing, Lamor saying, "Shechvayimi," right? She tries to seduce him, maybe even she tries to rape him. "Vayazov bivigdo biyada," and he runs out and she's still holding his clothing in his hands. "Vayanas," that's the key word here. "Vayanas," which means he runs out of the room. So Yosef runs out of Mrs. Potiphar's room. Right? And she then realizes she's still holding on to his clothing, while nonetheless he has run away. So he uses this word Bayanas twice within this narrative. Later on in source 13, it's something we say on Hallel. Hayam Ra'a, the sea saw something. Hayam Ra'a, the sea saw something. Bayanas. The sea saw something and ran away. What made the sea split? What made the water run away? Hayarden Yisov Lachar. The Jordan River saw it, and it also the word Yisov, and it goes backwards. Source 14, the Mechilta. Shimon Ish Kitron Omer. By the way, this is the only thing this man teaches. It's in at least five different sources. This is his only teaching that we know of. Bishut Atzmot Shel Yosef. Because of the remains of Yosef, ani korei lehem atayam, that God said, it was because of Yosef's remains, I'm splitting the sea. Shenemar, because by Yosef it says, vayazov bigdo biyadav vayanas vayetzei achutza, that when it comes to Yosef, as we saw a moment ago, it says that he ran outside, uchtiv, and it says, hayam ra'a, the sea saw something. What did it see? It saw the remains of Yosef, vayanas, and therefore the sea split. I'll put it like this. Yosef goes against his nature. Nature of a 17-year-old who is being seduced by presumably an attractive, available woman. By the way, I could take away attractive or available. A 17-year-old being seduced by a woman, and nature, hormones, so on and so forth, career move. No, Yosef goes against nature, goes against whatever's telling him to be with her, and he runs out of the room. So what caused the sea to go against the rules of nature? If Yosef can go against his nature, if he can transcend his desires and his nature and his hormones and so on, so therefore the sea, when it sees Yosef coming, for him, I'm going to split. And that's pshat in what the Mechilta just now said, that the splitting of the sea is because of Yosef. If we'll, just one second, go back a little bit more. Yes. One more point with Yosef. It says something interesting, an interesting turn of phrase. I'm not sure, do I have this verse here someplace? I read it before and I told, I didn't pay much attention to it then. I just said it's important that, let me just go back and find it, that as soon as Yosef was born, look it back in source number 4, Vayihi kasher yalda Rachel et Yosef. See, Yosef is part of the story. Not only is Yosef part of the story, Yosef is the start of the story of leaving Lavan. When does Yaakov say, okay, it's time to leave Lavan? As soon as Yosef is born. which means it's the Yosef, we didn't notice it perhaps, but it's the birth of Yosef which begins the Exodus story, or the Exodus from Laban at least. And therefore, when we have the Exodus from Egypt, part of what the Vilna Gaon is really teaching us is that Yosef is a part of that story as well. Now, keeping that Rashi in mind, sorry, keeping that verse in mind, let's take a look a little bit further. One of the things that says in Az Yashir, Uvrov Gonchat Taros Kanecha Teshlachra, Charon Chayachlemu Kakash. I'm not translating this question as what does kakash mean here. Earlier we had the kash, means straw. Earlier we had, we have faith to Amacholi Tzanla Koshesh Kash Latevin. They were searching because Paro wouldn't give them any more the straw to make the bricks they need to make. But source 18, we're about to see, is where it gets far more interesting. There's a book, there's a verse from the end of days, describe the end of days, in the book of Ovadia. Vaya Beit Yaakov Esh, the house of Yaakov will be fire. Uvet Yosef Lahava, and the house of Yosef is going to be the flame. Uvet Esav Lakash, and the house of Esav will become straw. Vidalku Bahem, and they're going to be lit up, Vachalum, and be swallowed. Vuloyem Sarid Lebeit Esav Ki Hashem Diber. And Esav will not remain because God has spoken. Now, keeping that really, you know, powerful verse, now let's look at Rashi on what we read before. Tasher Yolda Rachel et Yosef. As soon as Yosef was born, Mishenolad Satno Shel Esav. The adversary, like the word Satan. Who is the adversary Esav? Who's the one who's going to destroy Esav? Mishenolad Satno Shel Esav. When the adversary of Esav is born, Shenema. And he quotes our verse in Ovadia. V'ya Beit Yaakov Eshu Beit Yosef Lavao Beit Esav Lakash. Esh below Lahava. That Yaakov could be fire, but he needs the flame. Fire without the flame cannot go further. Mishenolad Yosef, as soon as Yosef was born, v'tach Yaakov b'kadosh baruch hu ritzah lashuv. At that point he knew and he trusted and knows, now it's time to go home, which means he's no longer afraid of Yosef, no longer afraid of Esav at this point. Now it's time to go home. The Gemara says this in source number 20, Boy, mine Rabbi Chilmi, Rabbi Shmuel, Bar Nachman, Yiktiva, Yikashay, Yoda, Rachel, Yosef, Maishnaki, Yatilad, Yosef. What does that have to do with the birth of Yosef? Amrlei, where Yaakov, Vino, Shain, Zarosh, Le Sav, Nimsar, Ela, Liyad, Ela, Biyad, Zarosh, Yosef. That the family or the descendants of Esav, they fall to descendants of Yosef. Shinemar, Via, Beit Yaakov, Esh, or Beit Yosef, Lava, or Beit Esav, Lakash. And exactly what we saw in the Rashi, now we have a source for this. Now, this actually is going to help us with another thing. When we get to the end of this week's parsha, in source number 15, Amalek emerges, they come and they attack Israel in a place called Rephidim. Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua, remember we saw before that Moshe passes on to Yoshua. Why Yoshua? He says to Yoshua, Bachar lenu anashim, v'tzei lechem Amalek. Right, Machar, Anochi nitzav arosh ha-giva, I'll be on top of the hill. So here we're back again to the mateh, which we thought perhaps was put away. No, Moshe still has this mateh of God in his hand, and now comes the battle against Amalek. Now, those of us who don't realize who is Amalek, Amalek, of course, is the descendant of Esav. Who is Yehoshua? Yehoshua comes from the tribe of Ephraim, who's the son of Yosef, which means when it's time to go to war against Amalek, who does Moshe choose? He chooses Yoshua, which means just like the whole story begins, that Yaakov can leave Laban's house because Yosef is born and now I can face Esav and have the confrontation with Esav. Now leaving Egypt, we realize another connection that we had not even anticipated before, that leaving Egypt includes a confrontation with the descendants of Esav with Amalek. Yosef was the one who was born that gave us this ability now to fight, and now Yehoshua is the one from Yosef who is going to be the leader, and he's the one who's going to go about going to fight. Vayas Yeshua kasher mar lo Moshe v'lachem b'malek, and he goes and he fights. To continue this now a little bit more, source 21, what we just now saw or said, the Gur Aryeh is the Maharal explaining Rashi, why does he choose? Vayomer Moshe Yoshua, l'fishahu mizaro shel Yosef, because he is the descendant of Yosef. V'kach manat Yeshua, therefore he chooses Yeshua. There's another point, and I want to continue this, and this is specifically important today. When I say today, I mean this time of history, including events that happened in Israel, but these events happen in other places. This battle against Amalek is the one that we read about again in Devarim in Source 23, and we read it once a year. It's called Parshat Zachar, and it's a mitzvah to remember. Zachar tasher salach Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you. B'derech v'tzeitchem v'tzrayim, along the way when you left Egypt. Asher korcha b'derech. The word korcha, I would translate, they happened upon you along the way. V'yizanev b'cha kol nechashalim. And they went after the nechashalim, is a very interesting word. There are commentaries that say it should actually be chalashim, that it means the weak ones. The nechashalim, the ones who were the stragglers, the ones who were left behind. V'yizanev b'cha kol nechashalim acharecha. V'ta yef yageya, v'lo yir elokim. You were tired, exhausted, and didn't fear God. There is a big machloket who this means, didn't fear God, if this is referring to Amalek or it refers to the Jews. And this is much more. You ever find this time, you need to go off and to take vengeance against Amalek. And it says, Timched zeich Amalek mitachad ha-shamayim lo tishkach. Wipe out Amalek from underneath the heavens and never forget. It is also important that when Amalek, the battle is described earlier, it says that Vayomar Hashem l'Moshe, Pasuk Yudalit, Ki macho emche et zeich Amalek. God says, I'm going to do this, which means there is, in Pasuk Tetzayin, Vayomar Ki Yad al Kieska, Melchama Hashem l'Amalek b'dor dor, that God has this battle with Amalek. Now, I want to explain something. We're obligated or commanded to remember the battle with Amalek, but there's something which we miss along the way. Rashi says in Source 24, Shekorcha b'derech l'shon mikra, that it sounds as if one interpretation, it's they happened upon. It was a coincidence. Davar acher l'shon keri v'tuma she'metamim b'mishkav zachor. There's another interpretation, and that is that when it says that they went after the stragglers, it says that actually these pagans, this tribe of Amalek, they caught up with the Jews who were not within the camp. We'll see why not in a second. And they raped them. They raped the men that were wandering about. That's one of the interpretations that Rashi notes. That these people were weak, which means our weak. And then he says something fascinating. Because the Anan Poltan, that they were no longer under the divine protection because these people were sinners. So I want to put this all together right now because there's something which I think is fascinating. A lot of us remember and we're told to remember the battle against Amalek is this battle against these people who attack us along the way and so on. And that's true. But specifically, who do they attack? They attacked those who were either physically weak and therefore couldn't keep up with the camp, or they attacked those who were spiritually weak and therefore they were kicked out of the camp. Now just think a second. If these people are spiritually weak, so why are we so upset? So realize something. The battle against Amalek is specifically because they attacked those who were the weak. And perhaps even there was abuse over here as well. Which means we are such a fascinating people. We all are commanded, and every single year we read and we remember what Amalek did to us, even though we never understand and we never remember what Amalek really did to us. Why is God so upset with them? Not because they attacked our strongest, and not because they attacked the best, because they attacked the weakest. And we have an obligation of protecting the weakest. We have an obligation of protecting those even that are outside of the camp, mechutz l'machaneh. We have an obligation of protecting those who are outside of the Jewish community because the cloud didn't protect these people. They didn't fit in. And even if they didn't fit in because of their sins, Amalek attacks them, and we aren't supposed to take vengeance. So this is what's fascinating. They're not under God's protection. So whose protection are they under? They're supposed to be under the protection of the Jews. And we go to war in order to protect such people. Which means the larger issue of the battle against Amalek is not only forgotten, it's as if it was never even understood. Because just connect the dots over here. We are to remember that they attacked our weakest. They attacked those that were not necessarily religiously strong. They attacked those who were abused. And those are the ones that we need to protect, and we need to never forget, and always to go and to battle the Amaleks out there that attack our weakest. That's exactly what Rashi just now told us. But I want to now finish off one more thing, which I'd seen years and years and years ago, and I find it so interesting and so true that I want to show it to you inside. And that's a teaching by the Toldot Yitzchak, who is Rav Yitzchak Karo. He's the uncle of Rav Yosef Karo, and he raised Rav Yosef Karo. So that's the verse we saw before. It all begins with the birth of Yosef. He is the one who battles Esav. And so on, and we'd see this already. You know, there's room to ask. Lama Yosef sitno shel Esav, shel Esav yoter mishar achim. Why exactly is Yosef the one, more than any of the other brothers, who has the ability of fighting against Esav? Hatshuva, the answer is as follows. Shelo Yosef yavo and Esav ladin. That Yosef and Esav, he could take him to court. And by the way, remember the passage that we began today with in the Zohar that spoke about the Eitz Hadat Tov V'Ra. And the Eitz Hadat Tov V'Ra has to do with Metatron and Samael. Samael is this force which is connected to Esav, while Metatron is something which is connected to Yosef. Metatron is the one who's the second in command and runs, as it were, heaven. Yosef is the one who's second in command. So therefore, the two of them are reflected by those two angels that we saw in the very beginning in the Zohar. So now Yosef and Esav are going to have a battle, but he's saying their battle is one he's going to, say, take him to judgment, to court. Lama asita ra lachicha Yaakov. Why were you so upset that you did such, that you threatened Yaakov? You said you're going to kill Yaakov. Why were you so upset? It was because of your hatred of Yaakov that you're going to be wiped out. And Esav has really nothing to respond. And by the way, I know what Esav's response would be. Because Esav's response would be, because he took from me the right of being the firstborn. Except when you look in the verses, it says that Esav detested the responsibility of the firstborn. The Yivez Esav into Bechorah. He was very happy with the deal. He didn't want the responsibility. By the way, it's interesting. What does Yaakov eventually get from being the firstborn? He gets the brachot as well. He gets the blessings as well. And he gets the rights to the land of Israel. By the way, note, Yosef gets the blessing, and therefore Yosef gets two tribes, and Yosef gets double rights to the land of Israel. And if you actually look at the amount of that the tribes of Yosef have, Menashe, you look how much Menashe has, half of Menashe is on the other side, the amount of Menashe is sort of like, comparatively in America, like Texas, is a huge amount of land. But the blessing goes to Yosef. The ein lo pe lashivlo. The truth is that Esav has no real response. But when Yosef is involved in this argument with Esav, and he says, why did you want to kill Yaakov? You know, what terrible thing did Yaakov really do? He relieved him of something, the responsibility that he didn't want. And I'm going to say it again, it's interesting that Esav now comes to attack, or Amalek now comes to attack, when the Jews are about to be the beneficiaries of that covenant. Which means there were two sides of the Avram covenant. One is they're enslaved for 400 years. Esav doesn't want that. They've worked enslaved. Esav wants nothing to do with that. And then you get the land of Israel. Ah, it's at that point that he wakes up. By the way, Yosef in Gematria is the same as Tzion. Tzion, Zion. That Yosef is the one who loves the land of Israel. Yosef is the one who wants to go back to the land of Israel. Yosef is the one who was personally enslaved, but still wants to go back to the land of Israel. That Yosef is Tzion. But Yosef, what can he answer to the brothers? What can he answer to Esav? Oh, Yaakov relieved you of responsibility that you didn't want. He gave you food, and for you it was a win-win. On the other hand, think about what my brothers did to me. Sha'adurabah, himasulira. My brothers were jealous of me. Again, go back to the cat. My brothers were jealous. And Yosef, for his part, took care of his brothers for all of those years afterwards. He gave them food, gave them shelter, gave them a place to live, and protected them. Which means Yosef can turn to Esav and say, again, he continues, says, V'yichakel Yosef et aviv et achiv lehim lechem lefi ataf. Avoshar ben Yaakov shikansu ladinu Esav yuma madu asita ra lachicha. That when the rest of the brothers will debate with Esav, and again, this is a debate in heaven, and Esav will say, why did you treat your brother so poorly? Yeshilam gam kenatem asitim ra. When the brothers, will say to Esav, why did you treat Yaakov so poorly? They'll say, listen, you didn't treat your brothers all that nice either. I mean, you people were terrible. Ra'ali Yosef achichem, v'bekashtem l'rgo, machartem ato Mitzrayim. That when it comes to a discussion with the brothers themselves, Esav's going to win. He said, look at the terrible things that you did to your brothers. But Yosef has the ability of destroying Esav, because Yosef is going to say to Esav, oh, you think your brother treated you bad? What did he do? He gave you food and took away from you responsibility you didn't want. You know what my brothers did to me? They kidnapped me. They stripped me naked. They sold me as a slave. They ruined my life. And Esav's finally says, so I had to get back at them. I gave them food. I gave them shelter. I took care of them because we take care of people. We take care of brothers. And isn't that ultimately what the message of the battle with Amalek is? That even the brothers you don't get along with, even the brothers who are outside of the camp, even the brothers who don't necessarily behave properly, we still take care of them. Because the battle of Amalek is the battle. That's why Moshe chooses Yahushua, because Yahushua can defeat Amalek. Because Amalek is willing to kill anybody and everybody, and Yosef is willing to protect everybody. And therefore, Yahushua coming from Yosef is going to defeat, Esav is going to defeat Amalek, and that's why he's chosen. Because the battle over here is not just a battle which takes place on the battlefield. It's a battle as we saw takes place in heaven as well. Which means the story of leaving Lavan begins with the birth of Yosef. And the story of leaving Egypt, well, first the story of going down to Egypt begins with Yosef. The story of leaving Egypt includes Yosef. The story of leaving Egypt includes a confrontation with Esav and Amalek, and they want to attack us. And that is conquered, actually, by Yahushua. That is the victory is by Yahushua, because there's a moral victory. Esav can't touch Yahushua. And when it comes to entering the land of Israel, that's Yahushua from the tribe of Yosef. Because when it comes to the tribe of Yosef, they are the ones who receive the blessings. They are the ones who receive the right of firstborn, because they're the ones who ultimately can defeat Esav. And now, if nothing else, you can understand the Chad Gadya and what exactly that whole song or poem was about. It's the eventual defeat of evil, and it is the feeling and this responsibility of Yosef to take care of everybody. And as you get to the end of the Seder, when we're thinking about the future redemption is that all of Klal Yisrael is not just the ones who are at the Seder, and not just the ones who are keeping the halakha, it's also the ones who are outside, and also the ones who aren't keeping, and the ones who don't believe, and the ones who are hurt, and the ones who are abused, and the ones who are suffering. And that's the ones that Yosef, more than anyone else, feels for them, because he knows what it's like. He feels for them, and he takes responsibility for them, and he will not let go of any of his brothers. And that is actually the story of the end of history, which means leaving Lavan's house begins with Yosef, and the end of history ends with Yosef as well.